Rob, long before you sat in that chair, I had a great producer. I've had a lot of great producers, actually. And the show would not have had the success it did without them. But one of the guys who started with us, the ground floor, when he was a Michigan State student, and he was also tearing it up in the hospitality industry over here in Okemos. But Richie Carney joins us, and talk about a guy who has taken his Michigan State education and parlayed it into something great at a young age. Richie, is it safe to say that you are a very important part of the number one sports station in the Rocky Mountains?
Well, I'd like to think so. You know, I guess that will, I'll leave that with the powers that be. But I certainly am very proud and thankful for the opportunities that I get to have here out in Colorado, the state where I grew up in. And I wouldn't have been able to do any of it without you kind of taking me under your wing and the time I spent out there in Lansing.
Well, are the people in Colorado, especially in the Denver area, looking forward to Bronco football more than they were a few days ago now that Sean Payton is going to be running the ship?
Without a doubt. I think this has been a much-needed gust of wind beneath the wings, a little bit of hope and optimism injected into an offseason that was filled with a lot of questions after a disappointing season. I mean, this is how we felt absolute euphoria here as a fan base after they traded for Russell Wilson. You know, the franchise that has never really found a way to truly draft a quarterback. All of their most successful franchise quarterbacks came via trade or free agency, and all of that. And there was like a stigma in this town that, like, hey, the Denver Broncos just can't get it right. They can't draft a quarterback. And that was painful. And a lot of the free agent routes that they tried, Joe Flacco, Case Keenum, you know, all of that, they just didn't pan out. But when they signed Russ, it was like, wow, they did it. They landed a future Hall of Famer, you know, not necessarily at the beginning of his prime, but still with a lot of gas left in the tank. And this is going to absolve a lot of the sins that they've committed since Super Bowl 50 in 2015. And it really didn't turn out that way. It was a massive, you know, flop in a lot of ways. And so the signing of Sean Payton, because he was viewed as this, he's viewed league-wide as this offensive mastermind. And yes, some of his greatest accomplishments are more than a decade ago, but his reverence around the league, the way that he operates an offense is still very much in vogue. And if anyone was going to be able to fix, quote-unquote, Russell Wilson, he was the prime candidate for the job. I think that was a massive reason why he was a candidate for them in the first place, and I think it's what sealed the deal in the end.
Oh, we watched Russell Wilson terrorize defenses. North Carolina State, at Wisconsin, certainly, in his year here. And then in Seattle, you and I watched a Super Bowl that didn't go so well for Denver. And we remember at that point, a lot of people said Russell Wilson was the future of NFL quarterbacking. What happened?
You know, I think that this is something that I've had to consciously evaluate within myself, because I think when you have iconic coaching quarterback duos, Brady Belichick, you could argue Russ and Pete Carroll were kind of in that mix for a while. You always kind of gauge within your mind, you know, who was really spearheading that duo. Who was that pairing? I think that Brady made a good argument for himself, you know, going to Tampa and having the success and, you know, based on what's gone on in New England. I think the opposite is true in Russell Wilson's case. I think that what was completely unbeknownst to me, but seems very clear now, is that Russell Wilson's success was geared largely around Pete Carroll's ability to create a scheme with his staff that maximized the things that Russ did well and covered up a lot of weaknesses in Russ's game that, to be frankly honest with you, I and many others here in town didn't even know existed. So it's honestly a phenomenal tip of the cap to Pete Carroll and what they were able to do in Seattle, because he looked like a completely different quarterback, and it wasn't an easy pill to swallow. And that's the hope, is that Sean Payton, who built an entire offense around Drew Brees and what Drew Brees did well, when Drew Brees arrived in New Orleans, he wasn't exactly under the best circumstances.
Correct.
And the hope is that they can tap into that here in Denver.
Do you think it's as simple as having a quarterback whisperer? A lot of people thought Nathaniel Hackett, if you listen to Aaron Rodgers talk, knew as much about quarterbacking as anyone. Just didn't seem like it.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's as simple as just having a quarterback whisperer. And I think that's one of the most frustrating things about the NFL is there is no one simple answer, one quick fix. There are things that are more impactful than others. And I think because the quarterback position is so important, you know, a lot of what the way we kind of reference it around here is it's, yes, there's 53 guys on a football team, but it's really 52 in one. Because without a quarterback, you can have 52 awesome players, but if you don't have that 53rd, that quarterback, your ceiling is a lot lower than you'd like. So I think having a quarterback whisperer, somebody that has proven that they can connect with the most important position in professional sports and produce, you know, championship level winning caliber play out of them, I certainly think that that's impactful, but a lot else goes into it. I mean, you mentioned the Super Bowl that you and I watched together. That Denver Broncos team rewrote every offensive record book that I could name off the top of my head and was one of the most stunning displays in NFL history, and they got absolutely eviscerated by the Seattle Seahawks because that was all that they had. They didn't have a complementary defense. Their special teams was subpar, but the offense was so good for the majority of the year that they masked it. So I won't say that it's as simple as having that, but it's a damn good start.
When you think about Russell Wilson's play last year, he was a long way from championship performance, light years. But for any quarterback coming into Denver, is it an unrealistic standard? You're going to be compared to John Elway. You're going to be compared to Peyton Manning, who maybe wasn't vintage Peyton at that point, but hey, he did produce a Super Bowl championship. So when you look at what Russell Wilson is being judged against, how big of a hill is that to climb?
It's a massive hill, and I certainly don't think Denver is the only city that you can call that. But like you mentioned, the Broncos historically are a legacy franchise. They've got 3 Super Bowl championships. They've been to 8 Super Bowls over the course of the league. They have 2 of the top 5 in most people's ballots, best quarterbacks to ever play the game who have won Super Bowls for their team. And so, yeah, I think that part of that comes with a fan base that you can label it a handful of different ways that all say the same thing. You can say that they are spoiled because they've been privy to such amazing eras of football. You can say that they're experienced and that they know what winning looks like. And so their barometer is different than somebody, say, like, you know, a Cleveland Browns fan or, you know, anything like that.
Detroit Lions fan, right?
A Detroit Lions fan. So you can say that they're just looking at it through a different lens. But, yeah, that's a massive perceptual hill that Russ has to climb and get over. And the only thing that I think gives a lot of people, myself included, still optimism about Russ in that regard is that as poorly as he played for a lot of the years, looking back, or a lot of the year last year, looking back on it, it wasn't necessarily his body or his mind in some ways that was failing. It was just a cataclysmic failure of a system. Nathaniel Hackett's ideology and the way that he wanted to run things was not nearly what we thought we would get. It was pretty clear. Now, don't get me wrong, Aaron Rodgers didn't look quite the same Aaron Rodgers without Nathaniel Hackett statistically. Right. So I think they might have missed each other a little bit, but I think Hackett misses Rodgers a lot more than Rodgers missed Hackett. And Russ has still got an arm. It's not an issue with that. And he had some timing issues with some of the receivers. They dealt with a lot of injuries. It felt like every week they were adding a hamstring or two to the injury report. And I do think that Russ has difficulty reading the middle of the field and kind of working through his progressions as cleanly as he used to, because so much of what we've learned happened in Seattle was kind of the organized chaos. I guess the closest I could relate it to is like Kansas City Chiefs football, where it becomes like roll out of the pocket, scramble out, and then just get open kind of thing that we saw Mahomes and Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce and all those guys do. Right. For so many years. And I think that they designed a lot of that with Russ to mask the fact that he's not as good of a pocket passer as maybe we thought he was. and his athleticism now is not as easy for him to overcome that as it was when he was in Seattle all those years. But I do think that with a coach that is more proven to work with quarterbacks, Sean Payton with a fading Drew Brees, Trevor Siemian and Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill still had a top two or three scoring offense in the league for a handful of years, despite averaging abysmal passing numbers and things like that. So Sean Payton has done a lot with worse than what I think he's about to inherit in Denver. And that's why I don't think there's still optimism in that regard.
Well, it says a lot when a new head coach, been a coordinator, but inexperienced at running a team, doesn't make it very far into season one, and people have already given him a nickname, a new middle name, of Can't, as in Nathaniel Can't Hackett. But yeah. When you think about where Denver is now, they really mortgaged the future to a significant degree with all these draft picks. What's the reaction to that?
Well, I think that it's kind of a, I mean, don't get me wrong. I think when you look at it on paper, you'll see it all over. You turn on ESPN or Fox or any of the stations, you'll see the graphic. For Russell Wilson, they gave up two firsts, two seconds, a mid-round pick, and then two players. It was Drew Lock and Noah Fant. And then right. For Sean Payton, they give up a first and a second. So it's three firsts, two or three seconds, and then three players. It's like nine assets in total for your starting quarterback and your head coach. And that's a lot. I mean, you can't think of a lot of teams in recent history who have done that. But when you made that move, if you're George Payton, who was the one who pulled the trigger for Russell Wilson, that's pushing all of your chips in the center of the table. That is going all in to fix a problem that has plagued this franchise for 6 or 7 years. You've tried to kind of – the Broncos, in a way, have kind of tried to cheat the system. They've wanted to kind of reap the results without putting in the dirty work. They didn't draft the top five quarterback or top 10 quarterback when they had the Bradley Chubb pick in 2018. They passed on Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, et cetera. They didn't draft Justin Fields at number 10. They went with Pat Surtain instead, because that when you do that, you're admitting that we're starting over, we're building from scratch, we're going to develop around this guy. The Broncos have always kind of done the route of, again, because they picked so poorly a lot of times with the quarterbacks they drafted, they kind of go the route of, hey, we're going to build a good roster and we're going to plug and play a quarterback and he's going to get us by. And it just hasn't worked. But when you trade for Russell Wilson and you give up those assets, you really put it all out there, you can't stop. And so in some ways, the hiring of Sean Payton was essentially just a double down on your decision to trade for Russell Wilson. That doesn't mean necessarily that Sean Payton and Russell Wilson are tied together, because I think if in 2 years Russ, his cooking looks the way that it did last year, Russ will be gone, but Sean Payton will still be there, at least as long as he wants to be. It's jarring to look at, but again, it's one of those things where if you're trying to get inside the mind of the team or you're trying to rationalize it, that's about all you can do. You can't go all in and then try to be conservative in your next hand. You know what I'm saying? Right, you kind of have to ride the wave, and I think that that's an extension of what they've done.
Couple of quick things, Richie, before we let you go. We're talking with Richie Carney. He's a radio producer par excellence and one of the best of the 80-some interns we have had here who have gone on to professional careers. Richie, when you think about the University of Colorado and Mel Tucker, and now it is UC Boulder East here in East Lansing, and now we had Jaron Mangum, who was a Colorado back before he transferred and now has transferred again up here. People there still hate Mel Tucker, or has that all faded now that Deion Sanders has ridden to the rescue?
I think that it's the hatred is still there, but it doesn't get brought up. Like the people are so focused on prime time and this and that. They had their press conference today for the signing period and all of that. And it's bizarre. I talk about it with my coworkers and my friends here all the time. It's bizarre that CU football, the makeover that they've gone over in just a couple of months, you know, in the Deion era of, like, they went from being universally regarded as the worst Power 5 program in the country to now Lil Wayne is taking tours of the facility and number one recruits are transferring and there's video teams and this and that. Like they've become, at least in that sphere, on par with the top schools in the country. I think their recruiting class ended up being 20th or 21st and things like that. Yeah. So, but yes, the Mel Tucker hatred is still there, and I actually was confronted with it just yesterday. We were having the argument after the Sean Payton announcement of, you know, well, it was Jim Harbaugh this, it could have been this, and I said there was no way, Jim Harbaugh, you know, would have gotten away with doing what he did, you know, leaving those kids right beforehand. He almost did it, you know, last year with the Vikings, and it got thrown back in my face to a degree where I couldn't retort. It goes, well, isn't that what Mel Tucker did? And the reality is it's exactly what Mel Tucker did, telling CU Board of Regents that he was a buff, you know, next year and pumping him up and then taking the Michigan State job the next morning. And I was like, but it was explicitly brought up to me as the lone Michigan State alum in my office. They wanted to make sure they got that Mel Tucker jab in. So it exists, but Prime has helped kind of soothe the rage.
So there are three scenarios, Richie. There's the one that you might hear from Harbaugh backers that, Denver was dying to get him. He was their number one choice, and he had a firm offer, and he just decided that he wants to stay at the University of Michigan and win national championships. Then you have the argument on the other side that, Denver was kicking the tires on a lot of coaches, and once they got a real close look at Mel Tucker, it made Sean Payton worth any draft picks they could spend. And then there's something maybe in the middle where there was an interest and maybe something could have come to fruition, but after the trip to Michigan, Denver never really put a paper in front of Jim Harbaugh to sign. Where do you think we are with those three scenarios?
I have gone back and forth on this. This has been such a hot topic of debate around our office because it's so weird, and the reporting around all of this hiring cycle across all the teams has just been wild this year compared to previous years. So I've gone back and forth on it. But my gut right now tells me that when Greg Penner and this ownership group went into their hiring process, Jim Harbaugh was the number one name on their list. We had heard tons of whispers about the weight that they put behind the Stanford connection, and that was part of the reason pulling David. That's why David Shaw was a candidate as well. It was kind of like diet Jim Harbaugh. If we don't get him, you know, they still value kind of that. But it was, and all this stuff, and I think that they pursued him hard, and they did the virtual interview. Right now, I do think that it wasn't necessarily like a clear number one, and then way down number two, number three on their priority list. I think Harbaugh was definitely their number one, but Sean Payton was like a 1B or a two, and same with and then D'Amico Ryans kind of emerged as that young upstart kind of guy that impressed everybody. But I do think that when they flew from Florida, from Pensacola to Ann Arbor, which is as far of a route as you could take to go from Florida to Denver, is cutting up to Michigan. That implies that there was intent. And the whole spin of they just wanted to chat, they felt bad that they hadn't done an in-person interview with him, I don't buy that. I think that they were still interested, and I think they had a document, a contract with numbers and a document there ready to sign. Based on whispers that I've heard and birdies that have chirped kind of in our area, I think that they did. But the concession that I've made was initially I was like, Harbaugh got cold feet and turned him down again. And they just – I started to chastise the Broncos, saying they look desperate. They're like stalking this guy, and he keeps turning him down, and it makes him look weak. But now I've softened a little bit, and I actually do think, because it's pretty – I think it's pretty fair to speculate, I think they may have gotten around Harbaugh in person and spent enough time around him and just said, you know what, this guy's personality does not mesh with what we want to do, and I don't think this guy and Russell Wilson are going to be, simpatico in terms of a work relationship. And so I think that may have been, they had the papers in the briefcase, but they never hit the table kind of thing.
Well, that sounds like the Minnesota Vikings a year ago when Harbaugh went in and told people that he was going to take that job. Unfortunately, the Vikings got enough of wind of Harbaugh during their interviews, and there's no job to take. So
Yeah, and listen, I don't necessarily think it's crazy to believe that, because I mean he's an eccentric dude, I think that if you are an NFL team, it's pretty easy to walk away from an interaction with him and say, yeah, this guy's personality probably lends itself much better in the college arena than it does in the NFL. In the NFL, you're dealing with grown men who've been paid. It's not quite the same, you know, and there are plenty of great college coaches that fit under that label that didn't really work that well in the NFL. And so it wouldn't surprise me if that was the case. Who knows if we'll ever really know exactly how it all went down. Yeah. But that's where my gut tells me.
Last thing for you, I promise this will be quick, Richie. A long time ago, early in the season, I was looking for an NBA team to back with a few bucks. And I got a great number on Denver Nuggets. And I was feeling really good for a while. Should I still feel good about that?
You know, they're the number one team in the West. Nikola Jokic is averaging a triple-double as the back-to-back MVP. Jamal Murray is not quite back to bubble Jamal form, which was just lighting the world on fire, but he looks good. Aaron Gordon's playing some of the best basketball of his career. So they've done too much for me to say you shouldn't feel good about backing them. I do just still have questions about whether or not this is a team that passes the confetti test that can raise the banner. I think they're a playoff team. I think that they can make a run at a Western Conference final. I just don't know. If they were ever going to do it, this feels like the year where the West is a little bit weaker. It's kind of dipped. And if this was going to be the year to do it, I feel like, or you know, if there was a year, I feel like this would be the one. So I still think you should feel good about it. But between their second unit being so inconsistent and Bones Highland looking like he's going to be out of town at any moment, which is one of the more bizarre kind of meltdowns for a young, inspiring player in recent memory. But yes, I would still feel good about it. But in the back of my mind, I still question whether or not they've got the teeth to raise the Larry O.
Richie, always great to talk with you. Thanks for the time. Appreciate it, and have fun with the NFL drafts when you won't be making any picks for a couple years.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It'll be very exciting. I appreciate it, Jack. Always love chatting.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.